Welcome to the More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics, or as we like to call it, real debate without the hate. Hi, I'm Kevin Kelton. I'm a TV writer, a political activist, and a lifetime Democrat living in Los Angeles, California.
Hi there, I'm DJ McGuire, a cost estimator and economics instructor, and a conservative Republican turned Democrat from Suffolk, Virginia.
Hi, I'm Greg Matuszak, a liberal Democrat who is a veteran of many hard-fought political campaigns, not all of them won, of course, from Cincinnati, Ohio.
I'm Cliff Dunn, a Republican Party unit chair from Newport News, Virginia.
I'm Rebecca Kushmider. I'm the hostess with the mostest from Kensington, Maryland, and I'm a liberal Democrat.
So this week, there was a lot in the news. Everybody knows, of course, that Trump got into a Twitter war with some people at MSNBC. We are not going to waste a lot of time on that because we think, frankly, it's a diversion from what's important in the world. So you can get your information about that elsewhere. We want to talk about what's really pressing in this world, and that is healthcare.
Bum, bum, bum.
What's happening with the GOP healthcare plan?
Well, as I wrote about this, the healthcare bill that the Senate has written has been delayed. They're not going to vote on it right away. And as I wrote about this earlier this week, it's because you can lead your caucus to a shit burger, but you can't make them take a bite.
Do you think it had anything to do with the fact that they didn't let anybody see it? They didn't take any input. They didn't have any open discussion with it. In fact, it was literally written behind closed doors.
I think it had everything to do with that.
Well, I know. That was actually what I was hoping you would say.
I am here for you, Greg.
Thanks.
You feed me the lines, and I will give you the responses.
There's behind closed doors, and then there's behind closed doors, hidden from people who are usually in there behind closed doors. And that's where I think they got into trouble.
Right. It was literally the room where it happens.
Right.
And people who are in the room where it happens couldn't even find. Did you guys see the video of Cory Booker? And who are the other two senators?
Rand Paul was looking for it.
It was a joke.
They went to CBO and were asking for a copy of it. Like, hey, have you guys, you know, seen
Can
this?
Can we see this?
You know, my take on it is that they got greedy. What this is really about, this isn't about healthcare at all. It has never been about healthcare. It's about two things. One, fulfilling the promise of repealing Obamacare, and two, tax cuts for the rich. They need to cut the Obamacare taxes so that they can write a tax reform bill that gives gobs and gobs of money to the top 5% in this country. This never had anything to do with healthcare. It was all about doing away with those taxes so that the baseline that they use as a revenue-generating baseline for the country is $1 trillion lower. They need that to be that much lower when they start writing the tax plan.
Well, and you know, but some people are saying the deficit reduction in this version of it is so much higher than in the House that they're saying that Mitch McConnell now can sort of give away chunks of that to make this more palatable to his caucus. Like, he could throw money at opioid issues in West Virginia and Ohio. He can pay off Lisa Murkowski with whatever she needs up in Ohio or in Alaska. No, Lisa Murkowski is not in Ohio. I know this.
Thank you. Thank
you. I know the difference between Alaska and Ohio. I cannot see Russia from Ohio's house.
No, you can see Canada.
On a clear day, maybe.
What I was going to say was if healthcare really was important to Republicans on this, there would have been hearings. You would have heard folks whose health plan got wiped out by the Patently Deficient and Unaffordably Careless Act. You would have heard people who said, my new plan doesn't have my doctor on it. They would have been rolled up in front of committee hearings day after day, week after week, month after month.
There would have been committees involved. The relevant committees would have been drafting the bill instead of Mitch McConnell's besties, you know, hanging out at a private slumber party where they braided each other's hair and took health care from Medicaid patients.
Because if you wanted to build political support for something, you do it I'm ignoring most of the slights that Rebecca said because I don't really think I can disagree with them, so I'm just putting them to one side.
And you're not even commenting that Mitch McConnell has no hair to braid. I mean,
no,
there is
some there. And frankly, I do not want to get into how Mitch McConnell culturally appropriates from African Americans. Because what matters here is two things.
He does not, actually. He's the whitest man alive.
One, if this really was about healthcare, we would have these hearings, and there would be a case built for whatever the Republicans want to do. But if this really is about taxes, and I'm not necessarily going to dispute what Kevin says, because he may very well be right, then the Democrats they should be able to have a solution for that too. Because what the Democrats do is go, okay, look, if you really want to get rid of the Obamacare taxes, if you want this to be Obamacare tax repeal, just throw that all into your tax reform package. Yes, we know that the border adjustment tax is not going to be big enough to cover it, but you don't want to do that anyway. So get rid of the border adjustment tax, do in all the tax cuts you want in tax reform, do all the tax cuts you want with Obama tax repeal, and just put a carbon tax in place to match it, and we can talk. It's the same strategy I talked about them using on tax reform. Now the Democrats can use it, if they're smart, to get the Obamacare taxes out of there while essentially leaving the rest of Obamacare alone.
Okay, there are other things that happened in the world this week. We don't want to take up the entire podcast just on healthcare.
Yet again.
Because, yet again, we've done that many times. But the U.S. has decided to sell arms to Taiwan, which obviously is a huge change in U.S. foreign policy. DJ, what do you have to say about that?
It has taken 5 months and 12 days. I can finally say President Donald Trump did something right. This reaffirms our commitment to the island democracy of Taiwan. For those who don't know, Taiwan essentially did everything right. Okay, they were an embarrassment in the Cold War, run by dictators who were our dictators. But when the Cold War started to thaw, the government of Taiwan made itself more transparent, made itself democratic, and now has had three peaceful transfers of power in the last two decades. That's three more than communist China has ever had in its near 70-year existence, by the way, on the mainland of Asia. And the Trump administration, I think there was a lot of concern for me and a lot of us who are worried about Taiwan, that the Trump administration would be so eager to try to get a great deal with China that they would essentially throw the island democracy to the wolves. They've chosen not to do that. And I am glad that they have not done that. We should be friendly with Taiwan. The Taiwanese people are the good guys. And it was very heartening for me to see the Trump administration do this. Now, to be fair, Kevin was wrong about something. The Obama administration had a large arms sale to Taiwan in 2015. This isn't quite a change in policy. It is more a reaffirmation that we will stand by Taiwan. And I appreciate that from Donald Trump. He finally did something right.
Okay, but the question is, did they do something right for the right reasons? Or did they do it for, one, the money, or to put pressure on China to put pressure on North Korea? And if
so, ding, 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 ding.
Thank you. I knew I'd get one of them. I am very good at the SATs.
Yeah, but Greg. Yeah. Greg, given this administration... I don't care what the hell the reasons are. Doing something right is so rare in this administration, I'm a little less concerned about it.
I was going to say, let's not look a gift horse in the mouth on this one.
And frankly, if Trump has decided that the best way to get the Chinese Communist Party to cooperate in North Korea is with sticks instead of carrots, that's even better. Because that's smart, too. That would actually be a right reason.
So what you're saying is...
Well, I'll be curious as if China actually does cooperate when it comes to North Korea.
That's the thing that I don't understand. How is this going to motivate China to do something with North Korea? If they haven't done it when we were being nice to them, how is, like you said, poking them in the eye through Taiwan going to bring them to the table? I don't see that.
Because it shows that the U.S. is actually willing to take action against them rather than just trying to play nice.
Yeah.
Up until recently, there's been a distinct impression, I think, on the international stage that the U.S. wouldn't do anything to actually put some stick about with China. I mean, look at all of the hacking and so forth, and what did we do? Oh, that it might have been y'all, and that's a very bad thing if it was y'all. We haven't really done anything on the hacking. We haven't done anything with North Korea, and until now it looked like we didn't really have anything to do that we were willing to do.
So the other question is, and I think motives are important, because one, if Trump is doing it for the right reasons, like all those things, like Trump is right and we're doing it because democracy is important, I think that's important. But two, if Trump is doing this for a negotiation reason, then yes, Trump's a genius, and he really does know how to negotiate a good deal.
Wait. Only if he gets the deal.
Right. But if that's what happens, then once again, motives are important. I mean, if he's doing this just for the money, then that sucks.
No, I think he's doing it just for the money. I think Trump knows selling. That's all he knows. Buying and selling. Those are the only things he knows how to do. And I think this is another instance where he's like, yeah, we can make some money. I'm a winner.
Right. Someone recently told me there is more money in the industrial military complex than there is in real estate. That's for sure. And ask Cheney about that one. I'm sure, you know, I mean, he was able to shoot another man right in the face and be able to pay that one off. So that's industrial military complex money.
We will now have half our listeners comment to correct Greg that it's military industrial complex.
What did I say?
Industrial military.
Industrial military complex. Okay. Yes. That's fine.
You were thinking of the Dow Jones Industrial Military
yes.
Index.
It's not going to be, and for the record, it's not going to be half. It's not going to be half. It's probably going to be one, and I'm related to them, because that's the conversation I had. So I'm just going to throw it out there, and then they're going to be laughing. So, yeah, that's all I need.
And remember, listeners, the folks not named DJ are the sober ones. <tonight.
laughs> Yeah.
And this is news.
For yourselves. Other sober people, or DJ and I are on the drinking train here tonight.
Okay, and speaking of news, as Cliff just blurted out, what about the CNN thing this week? You know, apparently they got one story wrong, and now the entire world is trying to label CNN as fake news. So, Cliff, what do you think about this CNN thing? Is CNN fake news? Is it one story, or is it not enough information to make a determination?
At this point, I'm saying not enough information. It's obviously there's one story that's gone haywire. Now, whether there's more there, whether it's coming from the top, or whether it's a problem with, I'll just say, journalists writ large, I don't know. I look forward to seeing more on this story, though, hopefully accurately reported.
So, you know, I'm sure that that Greg and Rebecca and I, and probably all five of us, we probably are all beyond tired with this whole fake news meme that seems to keep coming up. What's going on? You know, I was thinking the other day, I was watching a movie about the Hollywood blacklist of the 50s and writers being blacklisted, and I thought, you know, what Trump is trying to do to the media is not unlike the blacklistings of the 40s and the 50s. It's not calling them communists. It's not necessarily putting them on a list. But it's trying to shun them out of the goodwill of the public. And I think it's very dangerous.
Well, Trump's entire relationship with the media is so strange and so dysfunctional. I mean, if you go back to the stories that we read or heard during the campaign about him pretending to be his own spokesman to get, you know, press coverage, like, you know, when he apparently didn't have a publicist, he would pretend to be his own publicist and plant stories. And, you know, and now this very weird situation with him and the Morning Joe hosts and allegedly Jared Kushner threatening them with, you know, exposure through the National Enquirer and
the press briefings no longer being
weird. Right, the press briefings not being filmed, you know, and Sarah Huckabee Sanders standing up and saying, no, you know, you guys are all liars, and a guy from Playboy of all outlets standing up and saying, excuse me, you know, why would we lie? You are the ones with the incentive to lie. All of us are replaceable. If we get caught lying, we get fired. You guys don't. And it, you know, so it's this very strange, dysfunctional dynamic right now. But unfortunately, and I think we've all seen this in, especially in online discussions, people who 100% have bought the argument that the media is out to get Donald Trump, that this is a witch hunt, that all the news is fake, and the only person who's telling the truth is apparently Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I'm not even sure they believe Donald anymore. It has to come from Mike Huckabee's daughter to be true.
Actually, yeah. The parallel that I found more apropos for this, if you will, was actually Nixon and the Washington Post after they had that mistaken story right before the 1972 election, where they misinterpreted what Deep Throat told them, or they jumped too far on a source or something, or they assumed a question was asked that hadn't been asked. I think that's what it actually was. And it gave Nixon the opportunity to, for a while, temporarily, discredit the Washington Post and discredit the entire Watergate investigation. Long term, it really didn't do much. Short term, it did. I think what is important here, though, is that CNN acknowledged its mistake, and it took action against the people who perpetrated the mistake. However, the mistake was about a Trump supporter who ran a hedge fund who may, or in this case, may not, have spoken to folks connected to the Russian regime. In terms of the larger story, Trump's appeasement of Russia, whether or not Manafort or Parker Page or Peter Cage, whatever the heck is
Carter
name.
Carter Page.
Thank you.
Peter Parker.
Peter Piper.
Dear God, if Trump has Spider-Man on his side, we're all in deep trouble. but, you know, whether or not Carter Page or Paul Manafort had continuing ties with Kremlin-backed folks during the campaign, those sorts of questions have not gone away. It's just CNN apparently missed on a Trump supporting hedge fund guy. So Trump would like us to believe that this means everything CNN does is false and CNN is not credible. But the fact that CNN actually got rid of the people who made the mistake tells me, at least, that CNN is far more credible than the Trump administration.
Of course, of course.
And that's what I was going to say. It seems like, you know, a mistake was made, possibly worse than a mistake, given how quickly the hammer came down on these reporters. CNN retracted it, apologized for it, and all three of the people involved resigned. You know, handled. It's done. It's over with. It's
right. So let me step back from this. The phrase fake media is now what Trump uses. He doesn't even say fake news anymore. He says fake media. And this is what makes me want to pull my limited hair out. It doesn't make sense. It's a non sequitur. It means nothing. You cannot have fake media. It doesn't exist. Oh, yes, there can be a fake news story. What does fake media mean? Tell me what it means.
It's the campaign that got Trump elected, Kevin.
No. That's a fake news source. Tell me what the words fake media mean.
There are websites, whole quote-unquote news organizations that have been dedicated to spreading this stuff. One of them actually tripped me up. It was called the EU Times. There is a podcast from a year and a half ago where we argued on gun control, where I actually quoted those idiots, and I'll never live it down.
But DJ, it's not fake media. It's media.
No.
It exists.
But if they're spreading fake news.
Desinformatia is a different category.
I'm telling you guys, there's a difference between the term fake news and fake media. There's no such thing.
The internet exists.
The website exists.
I see what you're talking about. I see.
Okay.
I agree with you that fake news and fake media are two different things. But I am saying...
I'm not saying there's no such thing as fake news.
Okay.
Of course, I know.
But he calls it fake media, which drives me nuts.
Okay.
Well, you know what? But Trump did an analysis during the campaign that found that Trump has the vocabulary of a fifth grader. So I don't think we should be able to expect him to parse things like the idea of fake media being an oxymoron.
I would also like to say, Kevin, that you're doing a really wonderful job of letting yourself getting distracted here.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you know that he sold arms to Taiwan this week? You know what else he did this week?
He finally did something. Oh, okay.
He threatened Syria, or at least his military people did.
Oh my goodness.
Does anybody trust Donald Trump and his Pentagon to actually take on Syria without getting us sucked into the vortex of a 15-year war?
No.
DJ, you're up.
Well, speaking of sucked into wars, this is sort of an ancillary point, but there was an amendment offered in committee, I think it was appropriations, to finally rescind the powers to take unilateral military action that were given to the president right after 9/11, which was what predicated the Iraq War. And it was, I believe, Barbara Lee of California who offered the amendment to repeal those powers the grounds that we started a 15-year war with no end.
That's wrong. And here's why.
Wrong that she did it, or it's wrong that she should do it?
No. There are a whole bunch of things wrong. First, the authorization.
By all means, DJ, tell me the ways I am wrong.
Yeah, we haven't had a good mansplaining in a while.
Where does a mansplainer get a drink? From a well, okay. Actually.
And then I told her, I says...
You know what? Kevin, Greg, and Cliff, let the drunk podcasters fight. Okay. The authorization
of
military force...
It's really a battle
of
wits going on here between me and DJ.
Yeah, exactly. Whiskey versus wine. It's wonderful. The authorization of military force did not set off the liberation of Iraq from Saddam Hussein. There was a different authorization that was passed in 2002. The authorization of military force from 2001 was initially specifically for the Taliban and al-Qaeda. And while President Obama used that to go after Islamic State, which was itself initially al-Qaeda in Iraq that renamed itself, the actual authorization for George W. Bush to liberate Iraq from Saddam Hussein was a separate authorization passed by Congress in 2002. So the 2001 military force authorization was not what got us initially into Iraq. It is what President Obama used to get us back into Iraq, and I can understand the impulse to say, look, we need to at least update that to sort of explain what on God's green earth we're doing. I get that. But the fact of the matter is, in terms of sucking us into a war, this is a war that we have been involved in against the Taliban, against al-Qaeda in its various forms, including Islamic State, which was al-Qaeda, since 2001. And the reason it has lasted so long is because, frankly, we refuse to do what is necessary to actually win it. Now, I know I am one of the very few people on the planet and the only person in this podcast who thinks we need a military presence in Syria, not just to remove Daesh from eastern Syria, but also to show western Syria that, yes, there can be a Syria without Bashar Assad. I understand that I am looking for greater intervention in Syria than just about any other person in the United States of America. I understand that. That doesn't change the fact that I'm right and all of you are wrong. The fact of the matter is, if we want to drain the swamp, and the original drain the swamp term was about the Middle East, not about lobbyists in Washington.
Yeah, it was what Saddam did in southern Iraq to the Marsh Arabs.
Yeah, I said there we go.
I'm not sure any of us understand them.
Yeah. But the fact of the matter is, okay, when it comes to Iraq, we have to remember that Daesh or al-Qaeda in Iraq is essentially Saddam Hussein's regime recasts as a bunch of Wahhabist radicals. So the idea that it would be better to leave those people in charge of all of Iraq than instead of the peace that they have now, I find utterly laughable. Secondly, a lot of this, frankly, is due to the notion that Americans... I get the fact that Americans don't necessarily like intervening in the rest of the world. But the last time Americans chose not to intervene in the rest of the world was in the 1930s when we decided we didn't want to get involved in Europe and we got sucked into it anyway. Or even going back to 1798 when we chose, you know, we don't really want to go to war with France and we set ourselves on a course of events that sent us to war with Great Britain anyway. Okay? We are part of the world around us. We have a vested interest in making sure the people of the world have a choice in their own leaders. Because when they don't have a choice in their own leaders, the tyrants who do lead those unfortunate countries tend to see us as a threat, whether we want them to see it or not. Okay, as friendly as we were to Saddam Hussein in the 1980s, he still saw us as a threat in the 1990s. As friendly as Donald Trump will be to Russia, Vladimir Putin will still see the United States as a threat, and he'll still want to try to put his thumb on the scales as much as he can in every election that we're in through his disinformatia campaigns. All right, and I may be the last neoconservative on earth, but frankly, I don't care. The fact of the matter is we are in a better position when more peoples of the world get to choose their own leaders. And our foreign policy should reflect that, damn it.
Well, what I was going to say is that taking this back to domestic policy, the fact that Barbara Lee is offering amendments that remove certain powers from the hands of the president and Republicans are accepting them is indicative of how screwed up our current president is. That even Republicans are saying, yeah, maybe we shouldn't let this guy, you know, pull any triggers.
Rebecca, I would say there, though, is that you've had a number of Republicans who were growing tired of, I'll say, utter executive deference over the last 8 years. And I don't think it took a lot to push a number of your more Rand Paul types over the edge on this. The votes were building up over time because
I don't know how many Rand Paul types are in the House Appropriations Committee, though.
I'm not sure either. But, you know, my point is it's far easier to cobble together that majority in 2017 than it would have been in 2008 or 2002. I think there has been a growing momentum in that direction over the last 15 years or so, partially because Iraq became a bit of a quagmire, partially because we are still in some respects in Afghanistan, et cetera, et cetera. And I think people are just getting sick of it.
Since we are talking about Muslim majority countries and threats by Al-Qaeda and Daesh and, you know, all these various groups, we now have travel ban. Is it 2.0 or are we at 2.7 at this point? What iteration are we on now that the Supreme Court has let some of it go into effect?
2.1.
Okay.
It's still a bad idea, no matter what version you're coming to. And, you know, are we at the Supreme Court yet? It's being heard this session.
No, what the court said was parts of it will stand while the whole thing gets argued in October.
Right.
Yeah, they took away the injunctions.
Right.
It is a reminder that what is bad and what is unconstitutional are not the same things. And this is something a lot of Americans love to do. They like to think, "Oh, I disagree with it, so it must be unconstitutional." No. There are a lot of things I disagree with that I know are unconstitutional. I just disagree with them because they're stupid policy. This happens to be one of them, by the way. It gives our enemy a how-to manual. It says, send your terrorists from anywhere except these 6 or 7 countries, and we'll gladly let them in and kill as many of us as possible because we're a bunch of morons.
Isn't the fact that the court let it stand until they hear it, isn't that a big win for the Trump administration? I see it that way.
It is.
So
you're right.
Trump.
Well, no, but it was only a 90-day ban. So by technicality, by the time that the court actually hears it, if I'm not mistaken, it will have actually lapsed. Now, they'll still hear the case because they're not going to let something like this drop for mootness. But the administration will need to actually promulgate something, a successor policy, if you will, before we actually get to October.
Yes, I think that was always the idea that once they got this in place, then they would extend it somehow. Yeah, I agree.
Well, and now they've created these very specific categories of who's allowed in and who's not, and you have to have a bona fide relationship with someone in the United States. But what they qualify as a bona fide relationship is so arbitrary as to be comical.
So what would be an example?
Like if your brother-in-law is here, that's bona fide, but if your grandparents are here, that is not.
Really?
Yeah, like a grandparent-grandchild relationship is not a bona fide relationship. You can't come here to visit your grandchildren or your grandparent, but you can come here to visit your sister and brother-in-law. And that was something that the court left up to the Trump Homeland Security Department, I think, and they just sort of created this list.
I really,
and, you know, at first they left fiancés off, and then they had to add them all of a sudden.
I really like my brother-in-laws, so that works out really well. I mean, they're really good guys.
Well, I mean, I think Trump was all into the in-laws because he likes Jared Kushner.
Oh,
so much.
You think that's...
You know, he wanted to make sure that no matter where he had to go into hiding later in life, he could, you know, still come visit
Jared. It was so that Eric could always visit Jared? He could, you know, so Jared could always, like, feed Trump Donald Jr. and, you know...
No, you know, this is a way to ensure that his ex-wives can never see his grandkids.
Oh!
So this is the July 4th week. We're podcasting a couple of days ahead of July 4th. We all know that Greg has big plans for the 4th. But what I wanted to ask everybody
I think DJ's plans are for the 5th.
For his second fifth.
Yes.
Okay, what would the founding fathers think of America today? Would they be proud of their creation? Would they be embarrassed? Would they be still dead? I don't know. What would the founding fathers think?
One of the greatest tragedies of American history is that Ben Franklin died before the advent of Twitter.
That's true. That's,
I think Ben Franklin would have been great. Rocked Twitter.
You know, you guys say this, but you got to remember the founding fathers, you know, half of them, or at least more than half of them, were totally cool with, you know, slavery. And most of them were like, oh.
And having sex with their slaves.
And a lot of them were like.
In fact, they wrote laws women, to make it possible to have
right,
sex.
And women shouldn't vote. That's ridiculous. And a lot of them believe.
Wait. I'm actually hitting my microphone to interrupt Greg.
What?
For as much as everyone loves to beat up on my home state of New Jersey, New Jersey actually allowed women.
I was going to exclude Delaware. At one point, Delaware
allowed all adults, not males, females, and black, and white, and so forth, to vote at one point there.
Right. Delaware and New Jersey was cool. But also, I mean, and I believe, well, if I remember history class, some of the guys were like, I think only landowners should be able to vote. And there should be, you know, I mean.
Well, pretty much they all thought
they
that.
All thought that. Because these guys were, guys were the founding fathers, some of them were dicks. So as a whole, I think some of them may be put off by the fact of how much freedom that we've gotten. This was not their original plan. They really saw things a little differently. And I'm not saying things have turned out bad because, you know me, I love freedom. I love – this is all – this is what I'm all about. But I think these guys would have, like, time machined in here and been like, whoa, chill out here. You know, so – I think they would have been disappointed, but, you know.
I think Jefferson would have been heartbroken. And the fact that Jefferson would have been heartbroken actually warms my heart tremendously.
Right.
Because I really don't like that guy.
Wait a second. You're saying that you did not like Thomas Jefferson?
No. I would have been a capital F Federalist. Alexander Hamilton all the way. And Hamilton would have actually there would have been things Hamilton would have appreciated, some things Hamilton might not have appreciated but understood.
Now I'm going to interrupt DJ for a second. DJ was a Hamilton fan before the musical. I know this for a fact.
Exactly.
So there.
That is true.
Good day, sir.
With that, I want to thank people for listening to the only podcast, thank you to DJ's finger, the only political podcast with a percussion section. So it's been great. Please follow us on Twitter at MPU Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast and share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well. And if you'd like to debate with us between the podcasts, you can join us in our political debate group Open Fire on Facebook. We're all there. We'd love to see you there too. Any last words, gang?
Yeah, I want to know, why doesn't Trump have a dog? He's the first president in 130 years who doesn't have a dog. I don't trust the man.
Because Obama had one.
Oh, well.
I think because a dog would have better hair than him.
Oh.